Welcome to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And Cindy, so what we're going to do, we talked about this for a while. We want to do a program that is stretched over two programs so we can in detail do what people should at least do for themselves once a year, which is some kind of serious business dinner party.
Absolutely, I think
a real sort of diamond gym event.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And everyone can dress up and you can bring out the silver and the good china or whatever you have that's best and bring out your tablecloths and dress the place up and it'll be fun.
I mean, we talked about this because, you know, watching the Oscars and everybody's super duper dressed up and, you know, it's Los Angeles, so they're probably all going out to some spa. But if everyone's going to dress like that, you should be going to someone's home
instead of having a serious
candlelight dinner party that someone's been
planning in
great order and getting ready for a period of time and dressing up the house and dressing up the table and thinking about that, we talked about organizing for what are the images that thinking about that conjures up for you? What inspires you towards that kind of a party?
I think about the, as we just said, kind of bringing out all the beautiful things that you might have that maybe a family member gave you, an old piece of crystal or anything that's special to you, and having that on your table. It's an opportunity to use these things that sometimes we just protect and put away. And then I start thinking about very elegant cooking and food that takes a lot of effort, frankly, to make. It doesn't have to. I mean, there are certainly plenty of things that you could make that would be beautiful and elegant. But I mean, as a cook in your house, maybe this is time to stretch a little bit or, you know, practice something a week ahead, something that you've always wanted to make. And this is an excuse. But I highly suggest that you practice first. A dinner party is not the time to try something new.
Giving yourself a heart attack in heels.
Exactly. Yes. Or in your cowboy boots, whatever it is.
Whatever it is you're cooking.
That's right. You're supposed to be fancy. Exactly. So, yes, you're in your heels with your sparkly apron on or your wingtip shoes or whatever men wear.
I'm going to have to
fancy.
Get a sparkly apron to go with my wingtip shoes. Well, the question for you is there a dish in your house right now that you see that dish and you're inspired to? When I say a dish, I mean like a piece of china or a bowl or something that came from your aunt.
Absolutely. I have lots of things.
That begs a certain dish. Is that, you know, what is the inspiration for that party? Is the rearrangement of, you know, is it an excuse to rearrange that room? Is it an excuse to, like, I think some of the joy of doing that sort of thing is the discovery of, well, how can I use what I have
in
a beautiful way?
I have a three-tiered silver piece that, I mean, that begs a party because actually, we bought that for the restaurant in order to do a beautiful plate of oysters and shrimp. And, you know, it's sort of like, I don't want to use the word bar, but it's almost like seafood bar, you know. So you have oysters on the half shell that you can lay on the bottom and clams on the next tier.
Should we start the menu for this party?
Let's start.
Because oysters, I think, are the right way to start.
I agree. Raw oysters and how wonderful it would be to have a selection of oysters from all over the country, something from the south.
Maybe you have three tiers and you have three different kinds of oysters in the tiers.
You could do that.
And that you just keep shucking and replacing on that.
Mm-hmm.
On that.
So you have... I would pre-shuck the oysters, lay a little bit of damp cloths on them, or even laying parchment paper over them. But obviously, you're keeping them cold in the refrigerator, cold as possible. And, you know, once you are ready for your party to start, you're laying them out on the tray. And again, we're talking about three different types, maybe something from the south, something from the west coast, maybe something from Europe if you could get it, or something from the northeastern part of the United States. And you have these three different profiles of oysters, flavors, sweet, super salty, you know, whatever the profiles are. And how wonderful is that? And then you can have a couple of different sauces out. And that's a great way to start. And speaks of champagne, of course.
Well, yeah, champagne, right? The thought in my mind is, what do you want to dress the oysters with something, or are they just raw in the half shell? And if they're dressed with something, that changes what happens with the wine, because oysters can be. It also depends on weather a little bit. I think also, you know, that's kind of is it a shoulder season for oysters, or is it the depth of winter?
Mm-hmm.
If it's like this winter,
still in the depth of winter. Apparently,
it seems like it. I mean, I would actually drink something a little more warming with that.
Okay.
And dress the oyster a little bit stronger. You know. Maybe it's a mignonette or something like that instead of just like a little squeeze of lemon or a, mm-hmm. you know, or I mean, if it's champagne, just a couple of pearls of caviar on an oyster.
Yes.
Is a fantastic thing. But the champagne, I would say, to start for me is always a Blanc de Blanc, always 100% Chardonnay, very fine, very long. Probably one of the best purchases I've seen in a number of years in a great, great small grower champagne from super high quality vineyard site is from Guy Lamandier. And there's a bottling called Cramont. Cramont is one of the Grand Cru villages, and it's 100% Chardonnay from old vines, made in a really, really pure style, super linear, super fine. That and, you know, and maybe Malbecs or oysters with good flavor and almost like a little size to them from real cold water, I think would be fantastic as a start.
And if you did want to put a little bit of caviar on, a little bit of julienne cucumber as well is also really pretty.
A different kind of crunch.
Mm-hmm.
And something delicate, too.
And mignonette, just very quickly, is red wine vinegar, finely chopped shallots, and a little bit of cracked black pepper. And it is so good with oysters. And if you prefer cocktail sauce, do it. If you prefer, just having fresh lemon out, you can do that. But that whole tiered thing can also turn into something else with chilled shrimp or poached scallops or mussels or clams. You know, you could do a whole assortment of shellfish, and that could just be, you know, what a treat that would be. You could even do rolled smoked salmon on there somewhere, you know, something like that.
So it's at the old, super old-fashioned dinner parties always begin with either a cold hors d'oeuvre, hot hors d'oeuvre. Sometimes it's something standing, sometimes it's something seated. So if oysters are the cold hors d'oeuvre, that, you know, oysters on the half shell or other raw shellfish, that kind of thing. It's mm-hmm. the depth of winter. It's hard to think about anything else. It's
yeah,
a cold
really.
Hors d'oeuvre. It is the time for it.
Sounds good.
What is a hot hors d'oeuvre? Is it something crispy? Is it something warming? Is it something different texture from your cold?
I think it can go a couple of different ways. Even if you're serving a soup as a first course, I don't think anyone will mind if you give them a brilliant little soup in an espresso cup as a hot hors d'oeuvre. It's very easy to get out of the kitchen. It's something you can make 2 days ahead of time, so you're not under pressure to, you know, make it yesterday or the day of the party. So that's a great way. Or I love gougère, and I was thinking about doing gougère in a little bit different way. It's actually a mushroom beignet, and you take the gougère batter, and you instead of putting the cheese in, you would put chopped sautéed button mushrooms in with the gougère batter when you're making it, and then you deep fry it. And they're just amazing. And, you know, that requires putting on a pot of fat on your stove. But, I mean, what a brilliant hors d'oeuvre. And I think, you know, the effort that you make by frying something fresh and to order makes it even more special, because a lot of people aren't going to go to that effort. Or you could buy a little tabletop fryer, which you can easily get. Two small little two-tank fryers, and that way you're not even on your stove. You're in a real fryer, and it's operating the way it should, and you can put the right temperature dial on
there.
They perform
pretty well.
Yeah, they recover.
The biggest thing is just fresh oil and how fast they recover.
Exactly. The recovery is the biggest issue. So if you do buy one of those, or even if you're frying on your stove, just remember that fat has to come back up to temperature before you can drop more product in. And when you're dropping the product in, it's cold, and it's going to bring the temperature of the fryer down. So you usually fry between 325 and 350 degrees. But when you do make these gougères with the mushrooms in, you have to start at 300 and then turn up your fryer as they're cooking. They need to kind of almost bloom in there a little bit, if you will. So they have to start off a little bit slower and then become crispier, and then they start to puff. And that's a great hors d'oeuvre.
And that gives you a bit of, that does give you a vegetarian hors d'oeuvre.
Exactly.
Too, which is nice to have.
Absolutely.
The first thing that strikes me when I think about something cold that's immediately like salty, fresh, and not particularly sweet like oysters is if I'm going to do a warm seafood first course, you know, like to change it completely, do something super sweet, whether it's lobster or shrimp, and or even a scallop, and do that as the hot hors d'oeuvre.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Any thoughts in one of those that you like as an hors d'oeuvre?
Well, I love scallops. Again, we've talked about caviar, but scallops and caviar, if you aren't putting caviar on your oysters, would be really beautiful and would be simple. You could just do a little bit of beurre blanc underneath the scallop and a little bit of caviar. Or, again, these are all expensive things that we're talking about. I'm sorry, but, you know, we are talking about a very elegant dinner party.
I'm talking about once a year, serious,
yeah, we are,
serious dinner
so
party.
Make take people, it with a grain of salt.
Make people get
about.
A haircut and wear black tie when they come to your house.
Exactly. A little bit of truffle on top of the scallop would be brilliant. And, again, a tiny bit of beurre blanc underneath. And you could do that plated individually. You know, I've done a dinner party at my house where I did everything plated and passed. You know, you can call it whatever you want. And
sort of a stand-up dinner party.
Exactly. And I had a lot of people in my home, and I knew I couldn't seat them, and this was the way. And it was very time-consuming to plate everything, but they had some really, really great
food. Very easy for them to eat.
And they didn't have to go to a table and take food. I mean, it was all done for them.
That's always one of the things that I think that people do not think through sometimes, what oftentimes at home for parties. They want to do a dish, but to get from producing the dish to getting it in front of someone so they enjoy it while it's hot at the right time with the right glass of wine in their hand,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's kind of that's a little bit trickier. And if you're doing something that's relatively elaborate, by the time you put it on some big tray, it may be beautiful for a minute on that tray, but by the time the 30th person gets through the line of people getting it from the tray, it's not going to be remotely the same dish.
Right.
If you're doing, I mean, if you're talking about starting, you know, cold, salty shellfish and then sitting down to like the scallop course sounds marvelous, whether it's with truffle or a little caviar or just, you know, super beautiful beurre blanc, just like roasted in the shell with the roe would be as mm-hmm. classic as you could possibly get. Maybe a little chervil or something as a garnish. Sparkling wine should probably be not a blanc de blanc at that point. You sit them down maybe to a very delicate rosé champagne like Bicar Salmon. Maybe an excellent domestic Rotor Estates rosé from Mendocino. And we, by the way, will be talking to the winemaker at Rotor Estate later on during the program about making sparkling wine in California. But
very excited to talk with him.
It's really, really hard to deny the flexibility and the worth of having bubble. It also opens your palate up.
Mm-hmm.
That's the other thing. I mean, and it tells everybody they're on vacation
right.
for a moment. You made them get the haircut. You made them get dressed. You made them wear those shoes that torment them. For God's sake, put them on vacation when they walk in the door, right?
And Americans always think, I think of sparkling wine as celebratory. I don't. I think of it as something that I absolutely love and love to drink throughout an entire meal. I mean,
well, it's fantastic
I appreciate,
digestion.
Yeah, I appreciate champagne. I think it's an amazing thing to drink. And, you know, you can absolutely carry through almost any dish with it, you know, whether it's a Pinot-based or... You know, whatever that house, you know, the house that's so expressive and, you know, that has age on it or it's a vintage or whatever it is, you know, so beautiful.
So, and also individual.
Yes.
When we come back, we're going to actually sit at the table and get into that next course on Formidable Phone Food and Wine.